David Rothkopf is an author and commentator who has written extensively on politics, power, and national security. His new book is Traitor, A History of American Betrayal from Benedict Arnold to Donald Trump. Exploring the actions of some of the most famous traitors in U.S. history, including Jefferson Davis, Benedict Arnold, and Tokyo Rose, Rothkopf looks to put Donald Trump into an historical context. Rothkopf's recent books include Great Questions of Tomorrow, National Insecurity, Superclass, and Running the World. He is a former senior official in the Clinton administration and has taught international affairs at Columbia, Georgetown, and Johns Hopkins. Again, the name of the book is Traitor, A History of American Betrayal from Benedict Arnold to Donald Trump. And we welcome David Rothkopf to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure.
Very nice to have you here. It says on the leaf of the book, how will Donald Trump be judged by history? Spoiler alert, not well. So at what point in the administration did you decide that this is something that you wanted to look at in the terms of being a traitor?
Well, I can't pinpoint it to a particular time. Perhaps it was around the meeting in Helsinki with Vladimir Putin, in which Trump compounded everything that had happened at that moment by essentially publicly rejecting the CIA, the entire intelligence community's assessment of Russian intervention in the 2016 election, and at the same time essentially kowtowing to Putin and taking his word above theirs, which I, as an international affairs specialist, found shocking. There's no other similar incident to it that I can think of. But, you know, clearly from the very, very beginning of the Trump campaign and his calling out for the Russians to assist him during the campaign and the growing awareness that took place even in the last weeks of the 2016 campaign that Trump was working and Trump's team was working with the Russians, it certainly crossed my mind that he was somehow compromised.
So let us begin with a baseline definition, the definition that you use of traitor.
Well, I use the term traitor quite consciously because a number of people have talked about terms like treason, which actually require aiding and abetting an enemy that we have declared war with, and that does not apply. But traitor is a simpler term. It really refers to betraying a country, an ally, even a friend, and in this particular case, it covers the manifold sins and abuses of Trump, ranging from what happened with Russia to instances where he put his own interests ahead of the country's interests, either for economic reasons, as we saw with his hotels and other things, or for political reasons, which we saw, for example, in the case that led to his impeachment.
When it comes to the idea of wanting to put this into a context, for you, how apparent were the other traitors that you were going to look at in the sense of our history and who you could compare Donald Trump to?
Well, first of all, I felt it was important to put it in a historical context because every day there's some new outrage, there's some new tweet, there's some new, potential crime or abuse, and we get numb to it. And so we just think, well, this is Trump, and these are the times of Trump, and these are the relations between our parties, and this is politics as usual. But it was clear to me, based on the knowledge I have of history, that what he was doing was not business as usual. In fact, it was extraordinary. And so what I did was I went back to the very beginning and I just said, well, what if we look at every case of someone being declared a traitor or someone being accused of being a traitor from the beginning of our country through now, and just try to briefly chronicle them and understand how Trump compared to them. And so you go back, you know, to Benedict Arnold, or you go back to Aaron Burr, who tried to start his own country at one point, or you go back to the Confederacy, or you go and look in the 20th century to those who supported the Germans in World War One or World War Two, or the Japanese or the Russians or the Chinese. And you say, how does the damage that was done by these people, how was the degree of the betrayal compared to that done by Trump?
I would just like to read the first two paragraphs from your introduction. You say the president of the United States is a traitor. He is a liar. He is a fraud. He is a racist. He is a misogynist. He is incompetent. He is corrupt. He is unfit in almost every respect for the high office he holds. But what distinguishes him from every other bad leader the United States has had, and indeed from every other senior official of the U.S. government over 24 decades of history, is that he has repeatedly, indisputably, and egregiously betrayed his country. When you look at the beginning of being a liar, a fraud, a racist, a misogynist, incompetent, many of us knew that going in, right? We knew that in the running of 2016. We're concerned that the second part of this would be true, that he would betray his country. And then it became apparent, right?
Right. And, you know, I was in the group that knew it, you know, and the people who knew Donald Trump best knew that he was a bad guy, right? And in Manhattan, Donald Trump got 10% of the vote in 2016. You know, this is the city that was most exposed to him over decades. He got 19% of the vote in New York City. That's an extraordinary repudiation for a hometown son, but it's because people knew that he was a crook and a deadbeat and a sleazebag and a lousy guy and a terrible leader and not a good businessman. The question I think everybody had, who was appalled that he got elected, was how much damage could he do and how would he do the damage? And of course, we've seen that manifest in a variety of ways. He's ignored ethical rules. He's given out security clearances to his family. He's appointed his family to high positions. He's hobnob with dictators. He's blown off our allies and so forth. But, you know, underlying this, there is a bigger question. And that is, was he doing damage to the country in a way that is actually a violation of the oath of office? Because, you know, you remember the presidency, unlike most jobs, begins with somebody taking a sacred oath, saying, I will preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. And that's because the job is about a sacred trust between a president and the people that he's going to look out for them. And if the president goes in allied with an enemy of the country, a country like the Russians that seek to promote chaos and weaken us, and that person is subsequently going to defend them, going to give them the opportunity to do more damage, going to pass along information to them, going to grant them special benefits no other president would have granted them, whether it's free reign in Syria or working to advance the Russian anti-NATO agenda or whatever, then you say, holy mackerel, this is a different degree of bad presidency than we even expected.
David, you start off, as I said, that the first line in the book is the president of the United States is a traitor. And many of us agree with you on that. Many of the American people agree with you on that. And yet, as we are a week away from Election Day, anywhere from 43 to 46% of the American people do not. We assume, at least, they have his, he will have their support at the ballot box. That's the hard part to understand, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's hard to understand. It's certainly a breakdown of democracy as we know it. I think if you take that 43% or whatever it is, you can break it into certain subcategories. There's some group of people who know he's a traitor but are going to vote for him anyway because he advances their interests, big companies or backers of the Republican Party who want to see more judges appointed by a Republican and so forth. And there's some percentage of the 43% who don't really care. They have a different priority as a voter. You know, they're aggrieved, they're racist, they don't want refugees to come into this country, they don't want women to be further empowered, et cetera. And then there's another group that are just ignorant, you know, and they may be ignorant because they're apathetic, or they may be ignorant because they're just listening to Fox News and Breitbart, and they're inside a bubble that lies and lies and lies to them, and they think those lies are the truth.
So have we seen in history the popularity of someone who could be considered a traitor by a majority of the people?
Have we seen people who could, Benedict Arnold is taught as a traitor in every school, and he was a traitor. I mean, he betrayed the country in the most egregious way you could.
But did he have the popularity? I mean, is there the...
At the time, I see what you're saying. Are there other traitors that had a degree of popularity?
Yes.
Well, you know, of course. Benedict Arnold was a loyalist. You know, there was a percentage of people in the colonies that were loyalists, and it was not an insubstantial percentage at the time. Jefferson Davis and the leaders of the Confederacy obviously were supported by the Confederate States of America. They were supported by people who wanted to promote or preserve the institution of slavery. And of course, there are other communities, subsets, you know, even in the case of, you know, the Rosenbergs or people who were helping out the Russians during the 30s and 40s, there were a substantial number of Americans, not as big as the supporters for Trump, who were interested in socialism and thought that the Russians should be, you know, viewed in a different light. And that, you know, they were our allies, after all, in World War II. So, these traitors tend not to act alone. They tend to find some kind of support. And in the case of people like those in the Confederacy, sometimes it's almost half the country.
You write in a chapter titled Adhering to Our Enemies, there is a danger in projecting how history will assess a presidency that is still in progress. Presidencies are often defined in moments, crises, or breakthroughs that can take place in days or weeks or just a few months. Most presidents change in character over time as the president masters the job or ages, as his aides come and go and the political makeup of the Congress and the country shifts. Well, we've seen a certain amount of that in these last 4 years, but we've also, it's hard to think. I mean, what's interesting about your book is that you make this case that there's so many examples of the traitorous behavior, right? I mean, that there you can just look at COVID and make the case.
Absolutely. I mean, the president was informed in January that this was a deadly disease. He was told by his own national security advisor that it could be the biggest national security threat he faced. There was a playbook that was left for them by the Obama administration that said what you do in the case of this kind of public health crisis. He had access to all the scientists in the world. And he said, you know what? We're going to play it down. I don't want to do the testing because I don't want to hear the numbers. Why doesn't he want to hear the numbers? Why didn't he want to do the testing? Because he wanted to get reelected. And he thought that by suppressing news of the disease, he could save his own hide. And he placed himself before the country, just like he did when he reached out to Ukraine and said, help me out with smearing Joe Biden, just like he did when he reached out to Russia, when he said, help me out here in beating Hillary Clinton, or help me out again later now in this current election. He places himself first. And that is a betrayal on behalf of president, because he's got this commitment, this compact with the American people that says that he's going to place them first.
When it comes to, I think it is interesting of what the motives are. I mean, as you point out in the book, essentially we see it as greed and abuse of power. Is that what we see here with Trump as well?
There is greed. I think he ran for president in part just to improve his brand. He has certainly, directed millions of dollars in taxpayer dollars to his properties, to his children, or undertaken things that might have him viewed in a favorable light by people who could help him or his company in the future. So greed is part of it. But, abuse of power is also part of it. He doesn't much believe in democracy. He doesn't believe in the rule of law. I don't think he understands any of that very well. And he's put around him a bunch of toadies who have, for a variety of reasons, said, yeah, we'll help you sidestep consequences for your actions, whether it's Bill Barr, Mitch McConnell, the Republican majority in the Senate, or we will find a way around the law so that we can impose our will on immigrants or others, whether it's Stephen Miller or John Kelly or the other people in the Department of Homeland Security who threw children in cages. He has abused his power, and he has been greedy, and he has actually undermined our national security in some really serious ways.
So in your look at American betrayal and the history of that, what does that history tell us about how this is going to work out for us?
Well, look, the country's still here. So we've had 240
years. As of 1150 anyway, yeah.
Yeah, well, exactly. But, there have been 240 years, and we were betrayed in the Revolution when we were being born, and we overcame that. We were betrayed by the Confederacy, tried to tear the country apart. They weren't successful. During world wars, there were people here who were trying to help our enemies. They weren't successful. And ultimately, I don't think Donald Trump will be successful because, yes, 40% of the American people may support him for one reason or another, but the majority of American people don't. The majority of American people don't support the political agenda he supports. The majority of the American people want the country to be strong and people to adhere to the rule of law. Our institutions are 240 years old. Now, could he damage them if he got reelected? Could he undermine U.S. democracy? Could he undermine American leadership so we might never get back to where we were before? Yes, he could. And that's why I think the election next week is an existential choice for the United States. But, you don't write a book like this because you're giving up. You write a book like this because you think if you call attention to these things, it may help people make the right decision. And so fundamentally, it's an act of optimism. And I think fundamentally, I'm optimistic.
I certainly understand the optimism and share it with you. It the whole thing, though, is so scary because this is not a well-formed question. This is just very anecdotal on my part. But I always thought that there were guardrails. I always thought there were ways that would keep things in check. So this type of behavior, this consistent and reckless behavior would be put in check.
Well, I think we all thought that. I was in the government, and we went to the first meeting. I remember in the Situation Room in the White House, and I thought, this is remarkable, and I don't know why I'm here. I'm an imposter, and I'm going to watch all of these kind of titans with historical roles to play do the stuff of government, and it'll be kind of amazing experience for me. And I walked into the room, and they were behaving in petty fashion. And I remember vividly one guy tried to throw his can of Diet Coke across the room into the garbage pail, and it didn't go in. And I thought, wait a minute, these are the kids I went to high school with. This is, these aren't supermen,
Yeah.
The people who are in our government are just regular people. But the founders and almost everybody in our history thought they would be flawed. We could have a system that could offset those flaws, provided they stuck within certain norms. And this is what Trump has sort of set everything spinning, because he doesn't stick to the norms. He is clinically narcissistic. He cares only about himself. He doesn't know anything about history. He is fundamentally a crook who has been a crook his entire life, who doesn't care about the law. He thinks the law is for little people. And if you have enough money and enough lawyers, you can get away with anything. And that is not what the system expected. You know, presidents didn't have the same ethics laws as everybody else because everybody assumed the president would follow certain kinds of laws. And he hasn't. And I hope that we get to the other side of this and say, we need some more guardrails. We can rebuild those guardrails because it is possible every couple of hundred years that you are going to get somebody who is so, you know, beyond the beyond that they've got to be reined in.
Or, and we just have less than a minute, but or you allow the behavior to go on, you legitimize that behavior no matter what party gets in.
Well, that's the alternative that we face next week. And, you know, if for some reason Trump gets a mandate and he perceives it, that the American people are saying, have at it, buddy, do whatever you want, we're with you, we're in deep trouble.
The name of the new book is Traitor, A History of American Betrayal from Benedict Arnold to Donald Trump. It's a very powerful, poignant book. David Rothkopf, I thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have your insights.
My pleasure. Enjoyed talking to you.
Be well. Thank you. Again, David Rothkopf's book is Traitor. It is published by Thomas Dunn Books. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.